Federal prosecutors have charged seven people with running an insider trading scheme. Authorities say they made more than $60 million by using information they got from a Dell employee to trade stock in the computer maker. The case is part of a larger crackdown into insider trading, which has resulted in dozens of guilty pleas or convictions. And as important as these cases may be, some Wall Street insiders are questioning why the government hasn't been more aggressive in pursuing traders and firms that were involved in the financial collapse of 2008. Barry Ritholtz is one of them. He runs an investment firm that manages millions of dollars, and he's been an outspoken, very outspoken critic. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Okay, so these are two different things, though, right? I mean, the 2008 financial collapse was not a case of insider trading.
There was insider trading related to it, but it absolutely wasn't a cause. And the reason we see the SEC going after insider trading today is not that it's not illegal. It is illegal. It's just low-hanging fruit. Very easy case to prosecute. There's paper trails everywhere. You get some splashy headlines, but it does nothing about the rampant illegality and the systemic fraud that still has the economy at risk of another meltdown.
Mm. Well, so, but we investors, consumers, the general public, aren't we well served that by the SEC going after insider trading?
Sure, absolutely. They should go after insider trading. You know, it's sort of like, do we want police giving people speeding tickets, or do we want them capturing murderers? Well, they're supposed to do both. Insider trading, at least the way it's being prosecuted for these small-time idiots, versus bringing the economy to the edge of the abyss,
mm-hmm.
Requiring trillions of dollars in bailouts and petty theft versus
mm-hmm.
grand theft larceny.
But isn't that the very problem that prosecutors say they can't mount a prosecution that could work because it is so huge that who would they pin it on because it is so global and labyrinthine?
Well, I completely disagree with that. Let's start very simply. Let's start with the robo-signing scandal that erupted about a year ago. Robo-signing is where normally when a bank wants to foreclose on a property, which is their right and it's what they're supposed to do when the homeowner stops paying, you get some documents and you verify everything. You know, there's about 20 or 30 specific factual things that need to be reviewed and verified, and that process takes some time. And when you're signing 100 of those an hour, claiming that you've done all this work that takes a couple of hours per, and you make that perjurious statement to the court when you lie to the court, that's how we end up with people without even mortgages coming home and finding all their goods have been thrown out into the street, the doors are locked, a big orange sign, they've been foreclosed upon.
Mm-hmm.
That is supposed to be a legal impossibility. It's massive frauds. That's easy as pie to prosecute, and that's the first step. And you could do that in a lot of other areas.
So do you know that there are no investigations or no prosecutions stemming from this robo-signing?
Well, we actually have seen an attempt by the Treasury Department to cut a settlement with all the banks, and they'll write a check for $5 or $20 billion. But fortunately, of the 50 attorneys general in each state, every state has their own AG, a handful of them have said, no mas, we're not going to tolerate this. Before we cut a settlement deal, let's do an investigation and find out who the felon is at these different banks. Who is the mid-level white-collar criminal, and let's prosecute these guys. So you have the Nevada Attorney General, you have the California AG, you have New York, Delaware, and up until the last election, you had the Florida Attorney General.
Okay, so you have some states going after these banks, California, Nevada in particular. And then you also have in Washington the Dodd-Frank bill, which aims to put in a lot more restrictions on banks. So is that where you can find some cause for optimism that at least legislatively things are changing, regulations are being tightened for banks?
No. You know, if you look at what took place after the 29 crash and during the Great Depression, we came up with very simple, very broad policy responses. Banks invariably get into trouble when they're left to their own devices. Bankers are like 5-year-olds. Put a big pile of candy out in front of them and say, just take one or else you'll get sick, and then you leave for 6 hours. You know what happens when you come back to the room. The candy's gone, the kid's sick, and everybody's unhappy. Bankers are the same way. They can make a modest profit because it's a very good business, but if they use more leverage, if they use more, if they borrow more and invest it and they take more and more risk, hey, they can make a lot more money. The problem is, if you're just a little bit wrong, you lose a lot more money. And so we've seen bankers do things that they weren't allowed to do from the Great Depression until the mid-90s, when a lot of this legislation, a lot of these rules were changed. So I think we could have just simply looked at the past 20 years of legislative favors done for banks and just unwound it, and it would have been much cleaner and simpler than the complexity of Dodd-Frank. I'm not confident that this will do much. I would have preferred to see Glass-Steagall reinstated, where you separate the depository commercial banks and you separate the riskier Wall Street investment banks. We should have gone back to the old laws on leverage that limited bank leverage to 12 to 1 and not some, you know, insane whatever you think is best. You're smart enough not to blow up your own bank.
Barry Ritholtz, he runs an investment firm called Fusion Analytics and also writes a pretty lively blog. It's called The Big Picture. Barry, thank you.
My pleasure.